gonna get real with you. When real guys come, real fortune, we will raise market game changers. About to get real. These are the kind of guys I need to have in the locker room. The championship type guys. There's guys you just gotta recognize. I gotta pay the money. I gotta keep it. Everybody has an opinion.
They came with so much bravado and so much swagger.
We're not gonna make it. Sometimes you gotta create space where there's no space.
I can't argue with LeBron with this.
I do have a game problem with execution. Right?
He burned a lot of bridges. He's gonna be hated in Chicago. He's gonna be hated in Cleveland. He's gonna be hated in New York, and that's what I'm excited to see.
Now I blame it on Nintendo. I blame it on the fact that they never played against a team that's gonna be as dominant as this team could be.
The true villain team. The team that everybody wants to smack in the mouth every time they play them.
It's going down tonight. Welcome to Real Sports Guys, RSG Renegade Radio, where real guys talk real sports. It's your man Mark, the Game Changer, holding you down for the next 2 hours, 9:30 to 11:30 special time tonight because of the NBA Finals Game 1. If you ain't watching it, where you been? Get it on ABC. Your mind is not in HD, and I'm a little bit upset about that because it's hard to go back to regular definition when you've been watching stuff in HD for a minute. But it is what it is. We're going to hold you down. I got my man D. Wheels on the line. Holler at the people.
They partying in the Diag and Ann Arbor tonight. With the Dressel stuff, the Diag, they running through, burning stuff down. Even 9-1 against the Wolverines, they the happiest. But, hey, remember karma, Ann Arbor.
Hey, you know how they get down in Ohio State, man. They wanted straight cash.
Straight cash, homie.
Man, we got a lot to talk about tonight. Yeah, we got a lot going on, man. We're gonna jump right into it. At any point in the show, you know, we got our segments, our staples. If you want to get on, feel free to jump on. The number is 1-347-989-0844. Get on with the Real Sports Guys. Kick a high 16 with us. Just don't come whack or you're gonna get booted out the cipher. It's as simple as that. Simple ground rules we got. Let's get into it, though. Funky editorial.
One thing we need to say. Shall we say it, y'all? Melvin, Jimmy, Coleman, Ryan, say it. Everybody want to get funky one more time.
Yes, sir. So this week, for the funky editorial, we got the Miami Heat and the Dallas Mavericks going in the finals. And you know, after the Heat beat the Bulls last week, Scotty came out and made a pretty, I won't say controversial, but just a thought-provoking comment. And I think to paraphrase Scotty, Scotty said something to the extent that LeBron has the potential to be better than Michael Jordan at some point down the line, depending upon how his career plays out. Now, of course, anytime you compare anybody to Mike, you're going to get the slew of Mike fans that come out the woodworks like, nah, 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 you can't do that. And then, you know, right now LeBron contingent, you know, his fan base is fired up right now because they're winning on all levels because the Heat are in the finals. They look to be favorites, and depending on who you talk to. So, you know, if you're a LeBron fan, it's a great time to be a LeBron fan. Now, this comment speaks on a couple different levels, and a couple different levels I want to get into and get your opinion on. What do you think Scotty is coming from with this particular statement?
You know, because what he said is Mike is the greatest scorer of all time, and he thinks that LeBron can be kind of the greatest player of all time. One thing he said about LeBron is that what makes LeBron so dangerous is he makes you defend the entire court in a way that Michael often didn't make you do, because Michael just did what he wanted to do. Towards the end of his career, I think he really leveraged the triangle. But LeBron's game is so multidimensional that you can't forget about your guy, because LeBron is always looking and scanning the court. So he puts so much pressure on people defensively. The one thing he missed, the one thing that I think Scottie, and part of it is, Scottie and Michael have a decent relationship. But I also think Scottie, it's kind of like Robin, one of the people remember that he was born in Robin.
Mm-hmm.
Scottie got his own ego with it. Having said that, the greatest also comes with the dog meter. And nobody, when I do my dog meter ranking, this is coming from a Pistons fan. So I'm just saying this. When you do your dog meter rating, there's not too many people. I don't think there's anybody who in sport is higher than Mike
mm-hmm.
on the dog meter. And I think that when you think about the greatest of anything, you got to add in that element of just will and intensity to the win. And that has to be factored into the greatest, because it's why Mike went to those, six finals and never lost. Once it was the biggest stage, it was almost like it was finished. It was like Jay-Z and you just giving the mic after you done spit your 16 bars. And you just knew he was going to say something that would just cut you up. And I think that's part of the part that I don't think Scottie is factoring in it. But I think what he's respecting is LeBron's all-around game. But you can't even put him in a conversation until he wins a couple of titles. Because to even get in the room, part of getting your pass into the room to the greatest, you have to at least have multiple championships. So, I think that if he's able to get multiple championships, I think because what Scottie said, he forces you to defend the entire court in a way that many players haven't been able to make people do it.
Yeah, I agree with that sentiment. And I want to take it a step further, and reiterating and echoing that point, that LeBron has the potential. And I think, to me, this is where there's some validity in the statement. LeBron potentially could be a greater player than Michael Jordan, potentially. Where I get a little irked by with LeBron fans is that they want to try and peg Jordan. They want to use Scottie's statement to peg Jordan as just a scorer, as if he was just a scorer.
Yeah.
Offensively, yes. Jordan still was probably one of the greatest, if not in top five, perimeter defenders ever.
Yeah.
So I think they leave that end of the court out of the equation when you say he wasn't an all-around talent, because I think his impact at both ends was greater than what LeBron is now. Doesn't mean LeBron won't get there and won't have that effect, because he definitely has the tools. Right now, I would say, at this point in his career, LeBron is the greatest talent to ever play basketball, given his physical build and makeup compared to his overall skill set. He's like a cross between, Dominique and Magic, with Magic's ability to handle the ball and see the floor, and Dominique's physical explosiveness.
But the other thing that they don't take into account that LeBron hasn't done is Jordan worked on new wrinkles of his game all the time and developed aspects of his game that I think LeBron's developed aspects, but I don't think he's developed as many aspects to his offensive game as Michael. Michael always came back with a new wrinkle all the time in a way that LeBron hasn't accelerated his development in certain aspects. I've always talked about the post game. I mean, he's developed his outside J, but, Mike was developing
different aspect of his outside game, going off dribble, pulling up, you know, shooting the three-point range, doing all those different things in a way that I would say that LeBron hasn't accelerated his game. And LeBron's dependent more on his physical gifts. And I think Jordan, more cerebrally, even though he had those physical gifts, understood the importance of making the game easier for himself, not just depending on the physical gifts, understanding that it's better to be strategic than ambitious, right? Better than trying to dunk over everyone. You know, Pistons taught him that.
Right.
You know, and I think LeBron, I mean, I think the other thing that people have to realize is that LeBron is developing, it's like wide receivers in the NFL. Wide receivers now look good. Rookies can look good now because the way the game is played allows them to run freer.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing here. Guys look better on
right.
offense
right.
now than they did back with Jordan. That's the other thing, you know, Chris, that you can't even – people who watch the game now can't even imagine how much Jordan and Bird and Magic had to deal with on a night-in, night-out basis
right.
on the basket on things that would be flagrant threes would just be a routine foul. A flagrant one or whatever they call them would be a routine foul, you know. And so Mike had to develop a game in the context of a physical NBA in a way that LeBron doesn't have to even worry about. So not only does he size and physical gifts, but they can't really touch you when you come to the lane in a way that is egregious because the league is built to protect you. So it's kind of like saying, you know, when they talk about some of these receivers today, you know, being better than Andre Reed or better than Chris Carter or even going back farther, being better than Lynn Swann, better than some of those guys where they could basically hold you on the line of scrimmage. You had to learn how to get free. You know what I'm saying? So I think that's part of the equation. I don't think people got figured it out, and Scotty should know that because he got a migraine.
Right.
That kind of
exactly.
You know, in a way that you know, the Pistons, you couldn't do the Jordan rules now. You couldn't do LeBron rules because they'd be finding everybody and kicking them out the game.
Right. Your team would foul out.
I mean, if you watch some of them highlights of what the Pistons did, you know, I was a Pistons fan and I felt sorry for him. He kept getting back up. Mike kept getting back up. They were pushing him into the first row, bumping him and smiling, acting like they weren't hitting him. Poking him in the eyes, you know. And I was screaming, yeah, at the time, because I was a Pistons fan. But that stuff could get you in jail today.
Right.
They might have sent you to the dang cell.
It's at least going to get you punched.
At least get you punched, you know. So I don't think we're figuring that the style of game that Jordan had to play against night in and night out through most of his career in a way that the players today don't have to face.
Yeah, we got a caller on the line joining in the conversation.
Hey, what?
Caller, you there?
Good evening to the Real Sports Guys. What's going on?
What's up? We got my man Mo Red.
How you guys doing,
brother?
All right. Well, you know, it's basketball finals time, so I talk to the Real Sports Guys to see what's going on in the world.
Oh, yeah, welcome.
You guys going head-to-head against the finals tonight, I see, so... You know,
that's
good timing for all the conversations that's going on right now. And we'll listen to you guys talk a little bit about what's happening a little bit. So thought I'd give a call in and give a shout out.
All right. Appreciate it. So Mo, while we got you on for a moment, right now we're talking about Scottie Pippen's comments about comparing Jordan and LeBron and saying that LeBron, you know, when it's all said and done, could be a greater player than Mike. What was your take on those comments? Also, you can plug your show, too.
I think, you know, I heard you were saying about the kind of the controversy and the kind of the different camps coming out about the conversation there. And I think a lot of people are taking it the wrong way and saying that Scottie was saying that LeBron is better than Mike. He said he could be. I think it was kind of the key part of that. So I don't think it's that controversial for him to say that he could be. I mean, I think everybody is pretty much acknowledging now that LeBron is, you know, the best player in the league right now. And so I think naturally the conversations start coming up to, you know, some of the best players of all time. And I think he's, you know, obviously deserving of that kind of conversation right now. Obviously, I still think that, you know, he's got a long way to go in terms of winning some championships and making a lot more things happen. But you know, he is, you know, definitely, I think he said, like, you know, the best athlete out there. And I think, you know, he's probably the best player in the league right now. And I also think that, you know, from Scotty, I heard you guys talking about Scotty's point of view. And, you know, I think he is kind of, you know, the, I don't say the next evolution of a Scotty Pippen type of player, you know, how Scotty was, where Scotty was a guy who could do a little bit of everything and was a facilitator, point forward, a defender. And I think he is kind of, yeah, the next evolution, if you will, of, you know, Scotty Pippen had a little more of the scoring ability and more of the closing ability, you know, he would have been a much better player. And I think LeBron is kind of that example of it, of kind of taking it to the next level, of a player who can do a little bit of everything very well and who is not selfish, you know, in the sense that he will find other guys and, you know, he can defend, you know, four different positions on the floor at once and kind of be a game changer on defense and offense. So, you know, obviously I think it still is, you know, a way, way premature to really get into any kind of argument about, you know, him being the best player, you know, compared to Michael Jordan. But, you know, I think, yeah, it could be the big question. You know, he's kind of coming into his age right now where Michael started winning his championships was around this time in, you know, 27, 28 kind of range. And LeBron's been to a finals once, but, you know, I think he definitely has to, you know, start winning some rings and start making some things happen right now. And obviously the team they got together right now can do that. And it's, you know, I think time will tell in terms of if he is able to really kind of cement himself as one of those dominant all-time players.
Here's an interesting take I want to throw out there. You made a good point. You made an interesting point when you said that LeBron is the next evolution of Scotty. Given the rules of today's NBA, is LeBron simply Scottie Pippen if Scotty played today? I mean, if you put LeBron back in the mid-90s, would he just be Scotty? Or would he, yeah. I mean, what would he be? If guys could put their hands on him, if guys could check and chuck him out on the perimeter, would he simply be a Scottie Pippen type, or would he be what he is now? Given that you really can't guard LeBron once he gets ahead of steam going. There's nothing you can do other than foul him.
Yeah, I mean, I thought, you know, I think, you know, Milt was talking about how, you know, Scottie and Michael.
So my question is, do the rules aid LeBron in being greater than what he would be, making him seem greater than what he would be?
You know, I would say, yeah, I mean, obviously the rules have definitely changed the game a great deal, and that's what, that always comes to me with the argument about, you know, before you get into conversations about Michael, is that he was a totally different NBA back then, and you got to realize that Michael had to go through, you know, and the greatest teams of all time, Celtics, and, you know, and the Pistons, so, you know, there's a lot more, you know, competition in terms of what was happening back in that NBA, and obviously you had the fouls and the situations that were going on. So, yeah, I mean, you definitely got to realize, I think that's going to be a little bit of an asterisk or part of the conversation, is that this is a different NBA than what was going on back, you know, in the, you know, 80s and 90s in terms of how the game is being played. And, you know, as we see now, the point guard evolution, where point guards are pretty much, you know, driving a lot of the major teams because they can get anywhere they want to, I think that's definitely a piece of LeBron's game that, you know, aids him a lot.
Yeah, you know, I think there are a lot of different takes that I have on this particular comment. You know, I definitely think that it's really premature for anybody to say that LeBron is better than Mike. LeBron, you know, what I will say is LeBron has a squad. I would say for once, the playing field is even. You know, LeBron can... The people that support LeBron can no longer use the excuse that he doesn't have any help. And Mike has Scotty. Because LeBron's got D-Wade. And so now it's really just, let's wait and see what happens. Does he win? Does he lose? And I think this is where his legacy is going to be written. From this point on, from Miami on, is when we're really going to get an idea of where LeBron starts to solidify where he's going to stack up as an all-time great. You know, he has an opportunity to put himself in that, you know, top three, top four, top five, if he can win. If he can't, you know, he'll be one of those great talents. He'll be a top 10 player. But here's another argument that, you know, talking with LeBron fans, I have some LeBron fans in my family, amongst my brothers. And one argument I always throw out is, you know, people always want, in discussing LeBron, people always want to throw out the fact that, oh, he doesn't have any help. Nobody ever makes that excuse for Reggie Miller. Nobody ever makes that excuse for Barkley. And nobody ever makes that excuse for Pat Ewing or Karl Malone, saying that these guys never had enough help. They just didn't win championships. End of story.
That's right.
Ain't nobody making that excuse for them, but now all of a sudden you got to have help. Now all of a sudden it's like a free pass. Oh, well, he didn't have help. Neither did a lot of great players.
That's right.
You know? So it's an excuse for LeBron, but it's not an excuse for Karl Malone. It's not an excuse for, you know, they didn't get it done. You know, they got there, they didn't get it done.
That's an excellent point.
Go ahead, Mo. No, I think it's a great point, too. And I said that's why it's always going to be, you know, that's always going to kind of be that back of my mind, LeBron's head, is that, you know, he did kind of, you know, orchestrate the deal to Miami, and he got together with two other great players. And, you know, that's always going to be, well, I'll probably never be, you know, all the way in LeBron's court, because that's always going to be the back of my mind, that he actually left the situation and had to, you know, what maybe was the right decision for him to do that. But, you know, like I said, a lot of these great players in the past, not until they were, like, you know, over the hill almost in their, you know, mid to late 30s, really didn't even think about doing something like that. And so for him to do that, well, always going to be kind of an asterisk in my mind of how he, if he is successful, of, you know, how he got there.
And I think that's an interesting piece. And I'm still not quite sure how you stack that up against what Jordan did or how that plays. I think you called it an asterisk. And I think that's the best way I can articulate it at this particular point, because it's a different NBA and it's a different set of circumstances that allowed him to do what he needed to do, which was, you know, switch teams. But at the same time, it's real. I don't know. It, to me, it's one of those things where you do want to be like, it doesn't feel like the move of a great. You know, it doesn't seem like the move of a top three player to go play with somebody else.
Yeah, usually players come and play with that great person. I mean, and, you know, that's why D-Wade seems like the part. I mean, it's interesting how D-Wade gets lost in this, given what he already has a championship. There were times, I mean, Marcus, I remember when we first started talking to this and doing this, you know, talking about, you know, where D-Wade even fit as top player in the league. You know, just, you know, what he was doing in Miami when they didn't have anybody, the numbers he was putting up and the way he was defending and the way he was playing, you know, it's interesting that as we talk about these greats, you know, where's D-Wade with it? Because he's had big moments in the playoffs. He's carried his team with no one. He's done all that, never made an excuse for it. And on top of it, he didn't have to move his address. So, you know, the biggest thing about this is how much D-Wade has kind of been lost in this conversation, given his resume. Plays on both ends of the court, got a sick post game, does all those things, yet he's somehow lost in the conversation. And I wonder how long he's going to feel okay with that.
Yeah, because I think with LeBron, what you get when LeBron comes to your team, again, he's the most talented player in the league. At this point in time, he's the best player in the league, I think. Because, you know, you and me, you, Phil, and I have talked about it. There's not another player in the league you could have put on that Cleveland team and they would have won 64 games the way they did that year. Last year he was there. There's nobody else in the league who could have took that ragtag group of guys and really brought what he brought out of them to the point where they win 60-some games. But I still think that, you know, D-Wade is, like, the Heat probably, at this point in time, he has two best players in the league, individual players in the league. As well as Dirk is playing, that he still has the two best individual players in the league on the same team, in LeBron and D-Wade. And I think LeBron brings more to the table. Again, I think it's that same. It may be that same kind of concept that LeBron brings more to the table as a total package offensively, where D-Wade can create, but usually D-Wade creates out of necessity rather than luxury. You know, well, LeBron creates because he wants to. D-Wade creates because he doesn't have his own shot.
Well, I'm just, you know, but, you know, given, but again, the other piece I add into, there's a lot of well all-around players, right? Historically, we've had talented all-around players.
This is true.
But there's a difference between being talented and being great.
This is true.
So I think sometimes we, yeah. There's a difference between that. I mean, we
that sets up the other part of my argument is that, but the other part of my argument is that, you know, that's why I tell people it's too early. Just chill out, relax, fall back, let them win some rings, let them do what they need to do, then start talking about it. Because we could have had this conversation about Grant Hill before he got hurt. We could have had this conversation about Penny Hardaway before he got hurt. And people forget people like that. Because injuries took away a lot of what they had.
Right.
And so, you know, that's why I say it's a little premature. Let's see what he does on a big stage. Let's see what he does in a big moment. And, you know, even Kobe. If Kobe doesn't win a couple by himself, he's looked at differently. That's just the way it is. And not that he won them by himself, but he won them as a lead dog. You know, when you win with you know, one of the top three big men in the history of the game, it's hard to kind of present that as your championship. You know, when you win three titles with Shaq, I don't care what you say, you can't necessarily say, you know, them yours.
Yeah, you know, great players in most fields are flawed in some way, in terms of they dominate in a way that makes you feel uncomfortable, right? I mean, Jordan, that's the thing about Jordan is that Jordan was fire and brimstone, was going to make you feel uncomfortable, drove his teammates crazy because he would undress them. But the will to get to greatness, sometimes there's a lot of shattered souls. Very demanding. Magic smiled, but Magic was demanding. We're talking about that skyhook. The skyhook was, when he shoot the skyhook, he should have passed it to Kareem, right? Who was we talking about that? I mean, Kareem was wide open. I'm going to take it. You know, it's like there's something about it. Bird was, you know, on people, and, you know, they drive in a way that we're still waiting to see that LeBron is willing to drive. Are you willing to get in D Wade's face? Are you willing to get Bosh's face? There are times this year, if that were Jordan, Bosh would have been undressed, talked about, whatever. Like, Bosh would have been, I thought it was, you know, I thought it was, you know, three of us coming over here and do it. We the OJ. You know, I didn't know we were going to have two with a silent partner. You know, Mike would have talked about him. You know what I'm saying? In a way that these cats are just built differently. So, you know, I'm trying to see how they deal with this adversity.
Yeah.
You know, in a way because winning means that you demand so much of people around you. So it's almost uncomfortable. And
so who you guys got in the predictions for this series here? You guys made your predictions yet?
Oh, you want to go over to Marcus?
Yeah, I can go ahead and give my prediction. I got the Heat in five.
You got the Heat in five.
Yeah.
Five, okay.
Six,
yeah,
is everybody predicts six. Everybody goes six. I'm just gonna go five. go out on a limb and say five.
I got Dallas seven.
Yeah, looking overall, Dallas, I think the Heat definitely had the talent. They should be the ones who could prevail in the series. You know, I'm still not sold on everything yet because I think it's going to be a much different series than they had against Chicago. And, you know, I just kind of feel like there's, you know, kind of that Dallas kind of has a lot of those X factors in there, guys who, you know, like Terry, like Peja, who can erupt and have a big game. So I think I'm thinking looking at Dallas to go at 7.
Yeah, what you got, Devon? You said Mavericks in 7?
Yeah, I said Dallas in 7. You got people like Sean Marion and Cass like that who just don't care. Like, I was a star too, man. You know, Sean Marion out here playing like, y'all forget. Y'all forget. Oh, they didn't tell you about me. And so it's going to be interesting. And I just look at Dirk got that straight Drago. I don't care.
Ivan Drago.
He just got that straight. If he dies, he dies. You know, he like, I don't care about legacy. You know, he done gone back to them backwoods of where he was, New Zealand or Australia, wherever he was. I mean, he's in that bowl. And Jason Terry, no, he don't want to give away. He don't want to take that tattoo off. There's too many motivated
signs. Yeah, the tattoo. We get into the tattoo. If that was a good idea or a bad idea, we'll get into
that. I'm gonna say this real quick: if they get too close to winning, don't get past Cuban. Cuban might pull a Kerrigan.
I can see that. And the reason I'm going with Miami is two reasons. One, I actually want Miami to lose. And I'm trying to use some reverse karma. And then two, the kind of more logical reason that I think Miami may win is that Miami's got two sets of holes in their roster: the big man, in the paint, and at the point. And Dallas doesn't put a whole lot of pressure on them at either one of those spots. And so that's why I think Miami has the advantage. I think they have two weaknesses, and that's point guard and in the middle. And Dallas just doesn't really put any pressure on them at either of those points. I think they can figure out how to at least make it hard for Dirk. You can't stop Dirk, but I think they can figure out how to make it difficult for Dirk. And I think the rest of the guys are going to do – I think it's going to be a good series. I think it's going to be a hard-fought series. But I really don't – there's nothing that tells me the Heat won't win this series. There's nothing that I'm seeing that says the Heat won't win this series. Until we got some new information. You know how new information changes the game.
Well, yeah, I think that definitely the thing that did happen against Chicago that I really wanted to see was, you know, see the Heat get in some adversity. And, you know, I think if Dallas can create a situation where there's some real doubt and they, you know, they say, you know, maybe if they win one of these games, you know, in Miami and start putting a little pressure on them, I think that's going to be interesting to see how they react and will they, you know, they've been really, you know, open with the ball and sharing the ball and that kind of stuff, but you know, if they get a situation where they are down 2-1 or something like that, do they start kind of choking up a little bit? Do they start, you know, hogging the ball, you know? And then I think that's where Dallas is going to have the opportunity to make something happen. If you make them get in a situation where, you know, it is going to be more of a pressure cooker and it's going to, you know, create some adversity for them. So that's why, you know, so I think like you that, you know, it's definitely a personal part that I don't want Miami to win, but I do think that, you know, Dallas, you know, presents a different kind of scenario where the Bulls had kind of like 10 guys for they were kind of more of a defensive team. I think Dallas has got, you know, a team that's, you know, 10 guys that are a lot more offensively talented so they can spread the ball around and get scoring from a lot of different areas. And I think the key is going to be the bench players. I think, you know, for Miami, you know, can some of the guys, let's say bench players, but guys who are, you know, obviously not outside the big three. So Mike Miller and Haslam and, you know, Chalmers, those guys, can they do just enough what they did against Chicago to kind of provide a little bit of punch and keep everybody else honest? And then, like, you know, for Dallas, you know, Barea, Terry,
Peja, you know, the guys like that, can they come off the bench and really cause Miami some problems defensively and, you know, light up the, you know, trade threes for twos at some point, you know, to get in that kind of game. So, you know, I think Dallas definitely has a punching chance. I say if they could, you know, get into it early and kind of make the series kind of drag out, I think it'd be interesting to see how Miami reacts in terms of a real pressure situation.
And what I'll add to it is that, you know me, I got a couple elements. And 13, you got to have those cats who just don't care. And I think Dallas got more of those cats. Those kind of guys that, those kind of cats that just don't care. The Bereas, the other worlds, they just got some cats who just trying to get in here and just not straight up care that Miami is the odds, which is something that I think is a very important factor to beat Miami. That, so you got to have some cats that just don't care. And that's the pressure. And I think, Marcus, I disagree with you. I think they got multiple ways of attacking points. But I also think that, you know, even though they don't have that great additional local presence to go after their big man, I think Dirk is such a crazy factor in the game. And I think his game has evolved enough that he continues to put pressure on those big men. You start to see Dirk begin to go into the paint. He starts to draw the little fouls. He starts to do different things and activities. So I think they're not quite attacking the big men the way they need to, but I do think they have ways to attack that point position. You know, particularly with Barrera different lines that they put in, and Kidd forces a lot of different pressures cerebrally. I mean, he just puts a lot of pressure on you. I do think that. I just think they got depth. I think that's Dallas' biggest trick. They got depth. They can bring more guys off the bench. Really don't care. Who got one shot. That's all they got is one shot right now. They don't do it now, they done.
Cue up to Eminem. Down.
So I listened to the concert on J45, whatever they call that thing online. I listened to the Detroit concert. Yeah, that's how to get that one shot, to get them out of position. But yeah, I think it's going to be an incredible series. And then Carlisle, I think he's underrated as a coach.
And I agree with that.
Zone, they do a 2-3 zone and force Miami to be in a perimeter team where they're not the best. They got to be a perimeter-oriented team. They're not the best. And he don't pull it out all the time. He just pull it out at the right time. They're going to that little funky 2-3 and force them to be more perimeter-focused, which is not what Miami wants. They want to be able to penetrate and kick to some of their shooters. And he makes pretty good adjustments. I think he's underrated as a coach.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I think at the end of the day, the guys that Dirk is putting pressure on aren't named LeBron, D-Wade, or Bosh. And as long as those guys there's nothing going on with those guys in the game where they're being attacked a lot. I think when it comes out to closing out the game, and Miami's proven to me that they can win close games, you know. And unless you have a solid scheme to handle their defensive pressure, Bolster has shown me that he can make those late-game adjustments.
But what you're talking about, you're basing it on Chicago, who's limited offensively, and you're basing it on Celtics, who are limited offensively because of injury to Rondo.
But to me, it's not so much that they're limited offensively. It's what do you do with LeBron in the fourth quarter? When they go ISO, LeBron's the top of the key, what do you do?
Well, I think they got is that they can move to a 2-3 zone. They got a whole bunch of different mixes that they can fall to. But they also but the other thing is that I think Dallas puts pressure on you defensively. So where Miami had the advantage was that they knew, they kind of like, playing against Chicago and Boston, I like playing against a running football team who can't really throw. And if you get up, you know, you and I, we talk about the Badgers. If you get up 14 points and you're not really a passing team, it's like being up 30. Right? So they're playing against teams that if you got up 10 points, it was like being up 15. which is different than playing against Dallas, is that you gonna, the pressure is you got to keep scoring because Dallas gonna score. So that's why I think it was a little different. With you have a lot more confidence down the stretch when you know you're not going to get that many offensive weapons. That's my only thing I would say about those two things. It's like somebody killing a buzzer.
Hey, we got another car on the line. We're gonna get him on. I don't know who this is. We'll see. Caller, you're on with the Real Sports Guys. Who we got here?
Hi, Kelsey.
Hello.
Are you speaking to me? Hello.
What did you say your name was? I'm sorry, I missed it. What was your name?
My name is Rita, and I'm calling out of California.
Oh, thanks for calling, Rita. What's up?
Thank you. No, I was just listening to you guys. I didn't get a chance to watch, so I don't know who actually won.
It's still going on. Hello, you still there?
Yes, ma'am.
Rita, you're breaking up. We're having a hard time hearing you. Are you still there?
I apologize. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Okay.
Yeah.
So,
I was asking, what is
how do you feel about the series? Who do you think is going to win?
I know Miami has a great chance. Uh-oh. Did I lose you guys?
Hello? Hold on. I'm having a hard time hearing you.
It's myself. I apologize. I said I hope Dallas wins, but I think Miami has a better shot.
Yeah, see, I think you're in the same boat as me. I'm really rooting for Dallas to pull it out. That's what I'm going for. I want Dallas to win. But I think Miami has, again, unless some new information arises, My information makes me feel that Miami has the advantage,
I
hate to say.
If we become 100%, I think that Miami will take it. But may I ask what the score is?
Yeah, the score, it just came back on. Let me see. The score to the game is 70-66. Miami is up 4 with 8 minutes and 44 seconds left.
Okay, thank you. If you guys don't mind, I'd like to just continue listening. I don't know if you're going to stay on for the day.
All right, well, we appreciate you calling in, and hopefully we can get you on again. Feel free to call in anytime.
Thank you.
Thank you. Take care. All right, so we got a caller from California. Getting on with the Real Sports Guys, holding it down. Charles, are you guys still there?
We're all here, and I think Rita made a good point, and I think conventional wisdom says, that everything you're saying is right. I just look, and Mark Cuban, both you and Maurice have been around sports long enough. You guys have played at the college level, and in your sports, at your level, you've been elite players. There's just that variable. You can look at somebody's eyes and think, you know what? He got a little crazy in his eye. He like, I've never seen Dirk like this. I've been Burke Dirk's bandwagon all the whole time, and I haven't been the biggest Dirk fan ever. But it's just something about his body language that tells me he gonna find a way. And that's the only thing that just is maybe I'm missing it. I just appreciate the way he's been approaching his playoffs.
And for me, that's a piece of new information, because everything I've seen from Dirk to this point in his career says that I don't know if I can trust him in this moment. Up until this moment, he's showing that this seems to be different and this feels different as far as how Dirk is playing, what Dirk looks like, what Dirk is bringing to the table. But overall, I'm not sure. I got to see it. And I haven't seen it just yet.
And that's the information I'm waiting on.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
Go ahead, Mo.
No, I was gonna say I'll say a little piece and then I'm gonna break off. But yeah, I'm thinking that factor with Dirk, yeah, after, you know, what happened back in the in 06 in the finals, and you know, Dallas obviously has had a few years where they've definitely disappointed on expectations and having some early exits out of the playoffs. You know, it definitely, you know, makes me, you know, worried about, you know, can Dirk show up in the moment. And this playoff series has obviously been a little bit, has been different for him in terms of his production, but I do think, you know, that, you know, Miami's got a definitely, you know, much better defensive team than Oklahoma City had. And, you know, but I, you know, I think he has to show up, obviously, if they're gonna win the series. He's going to be a big factor in the series. And not necessarily always scoring the ball. I think, you know, he creates those matchup problems where, you know, they're going to have to double-team on Dirk sometimes. That's going to free up the shots for other players on that team. And that's where I think Dallas has, again, that ability to hit those outside shots, space the floor, and to have guys like that who can, you know, make Dallas have to defend the whole court. And Dirk can create, you know, not necessarily always scoring the ball, but creating those mismatches that might open up other guys for shots. So that's where I think it's going to be, you know, I think Dallas has got a puncher's shot, and that's where I say that's where it's going to be at in terms of that factor. And one thing I'll say before I get out here, guys, is that you guys mentioned coaching as well. I think it's been, you know, kind of a overlooked story is that, you know, Spoelstra, I think he's done a pretty decent job. I think Pat Riley has probably been behind the scenes a lot more than, you know, than we know about, but I was, you know, actually surprised by his coaching up to this point. You know, I think, you know, Dallas' coach, you know, deserves a good job. You know, so kudos for his job as well. But I think it's, you know, be interesting to see in terms of coaching moves how this kind of plays off, and if that 2-3 zone can come out and make some things happen. And, you know, different buttons you're going to push throughout the playoff series. You know, I was watching earlier. I saw that Maria and Jason Kidd were on the court at the same time, so I'm not sure if I've seen that before or not, but it's going to be interesting to see some coaching moves that will play out in this series too, and how that's going to make a factor in terms of, you know, matchups. Is LeBron going to play Dirk at some point, maybe late in the fourth quarter, like he did against Derrick Rose? You know, who's going to be the matchups and that kind of thing? So it should be some coaching will come into the series as well and make some decisions happen. So I'm breaking off here, boys, but good to catch up with you guys as always. And keep it going.
Hey, let us know about your show now. Give a chance to plug it.
You know, you got to check out the Hallmark's Give Me a Mo show, you know, supporting the Blog Talk Radio format here as well. We're on Sundays, 8 o'clock Central Time. And, you know, three guys talking sports. You know, we got flavor from the East Coast, West Coast, and Midwest. Three boys have been friends since back in the college days, so you know, we're always talking a little stuff as well, and we bring that flavor from all over the country, so.
All right, Bo. Sunday night.
All right, I'll be on there. Later.
All right, take care, Mo. Peace.
Yep, peace.
So I want to take this moment. Again, thanks to Mo Red. Check out his show Sunday, 8 p.m. Central Time, I think. Right, Central Time?
Central Time.
All right. Check that out. You know, we want to support our brethren in the radio world. Mo's a good guy. Mo's one of us. So please support his show. Now, we want to transition in five on the black-hand side, segment of the show where we give you five different statements about one particular topic, and we kind of go in on it and give you our takes on the particular questions that we come up with. Now, this week, old Coach Tressel. Man, it really come within the crosshairs in the last 24 hours. It was looking bad for him. It was looking real bad for him for about a week or so. But, you know, I think Tressel woke up this morning and he heard this sound. He had one of those. He had one of those Pac-Man moments where it was a wrap. It was a wrap. And that program out there in Columbus, they may have to the next event they have won't be a spring game. It may be a visitation or a wake. That program is gonna be dead. It's gonna be dead. So I got some questions for you. So quick synopsis of the situation. Basically, Trussell was just creating an environment where you got your quarterback, your starting quarterback, within a two-year span going through about eight cars. You got guys hanging out in tattoo parlors, trading team memorabilia, awards, game uniform, game equipment for tattoos. And I'm sure there was other monies that were exchanged in other different ways. But just a real, real shady environment going on up there. Got wind to the NCAA. They suspended five players. Well, the school suspended five players. Trussell made those five players promise to come back next year and not go pro and not leave the program, even though a couple weeks later, it comes out that he knew about the infractions way before the NCAA or the university found out anything. So as the story progresses, more and more comes out about how much he knew. He then suspends himself, or the university suspends him, however you want to play it, for five games. So now he gets to sit with his players. Time passes. More people start to dig into the story. And before you know it, we got a full-blown mess coming out of Columbus. And Trussell's at the center of it. The play, Terrell Pryor, star quarterback, is at the center of it, and there's really no way around it at this point. So over the weekend, Trussell resigned. Called it quits at OSU. And honestly, it's really something that I never thought it would come to. I never thought at any moment that he was going to resign because of what he's meant to that program and how much success he's had. I thought he was Teflon. I thought he'd just ride it out. I really did. But, so that's the situation. That's what we're going to get into. And we, for five on the black hand side, and we're going to go ahead and get into it.
Five on the black hand side.
Yes, sir. So, first question, Devon. I'm going to throw this out to you. Whose fault is it ultimately?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, obviously Trussell and managing, you know, if you spend a lot of time around programs and compliance and stuff, and I spent some time around this, that coaches are, when they're doing their job, are paranoid about everything. Any question you ever have, you go to compliance. And so I think it ultimately, you know, I think Trussell is kind of responsible for monitoring the environment. He has a big-time program. That means you have all the resources. You know where people are. And I'm tired of these national press guys, you know, Sports Illustrated guys, talking about them being seated. This is Columbus, Ohio. I used to recruit in Columbus, Ohio. This ain't Compton. Let's get over it. I mean, and so I'll get the fault, but I just want to – people describe this like they in Compton. Like they are Southside Chicago, like it's the Bronx, like this is Columbus. CD is about a 3-block radius, so like so that's part of it. People know in cities like that. You know, I grew up in Ann Arbor, and some of the folks they talk about are cats I knew, who are hustlers. But it's hard to get into the environment. It's like, we can get too deep in this, but who's at fault? Let me ask that question. We'll get back to that later. So that was something I just wanted to say. But Trussell obviously is at fault. Smith, the AD, is at fault for creating an environment, being that accountability, you know, making sure people understand that. Obviously, Gordon G. has to be at fault. And he's one of the most powerful guys in higher education as a president. Everybody's got to be about it. And so I say the players are at fault as well because they know what they're doing. You know, and you and I have been pushers on the game is the game. There's a lot to it. You know, but when you're trying to get – when you hand – this ain't selling memorabilia so you got a little pocket change to get you a cheeseburger. This is about tattoos. So part of it is we also got to keep it real on that. our young people got to make better decisions. You know, you ain't, I mean, hustling for a tattoo, I mean, what, where's your priority? And so I think everybody has a little bit in the game. But ultimately, I think the NC, this is what happens when you set up a situation where the only way out is deniability. You got to be able to deny it. And when you got a situation where, like they talked about earlier, I heard a guy saying, where all the people in a billion-dollar industry, but all the employees get paid the same thing, nothing. So you got a black market that's coming. So you ultimately, I think, you know, coaches know everything. You know that market. You know, folks got people in the streets, eyes, ears, everything in the street. And for this stuff to kind of be happening and cars are happening and coaches know nothing, that's pretty hard. You know, you and I spent time around big-time programs. And coaches, somebody find out something. Word gets back quickly. And if you drive the car up to practice, like, if you're 19 years old and you drive the car up to practice, I'm walking up to you. Like, where the hell did you get that car? Show me the paperwork. Did you register?
Right.
So,
who name is in?
Yeah, everybody got a little bit of fault in the game. But ultimately, Trestle, because of the standards he so-called held, is ultimately his fault. And, you know, he paid the price for it.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. You know, to answer the question, who's ultimately at fault, to me it's the coach. It's the coach and the AD. You know, you can put it on compliance all you want to. I was reading an article today. It said, you know, last year they gave compliance 2 thumbs up. Said, you're doing a great job. So now you can't blame compliance. Compliance is out of the question. So you can't blame compliance. So it falls on the coach, and then the athletic director, because the athletic director at some point had to sit down with his coach, even if it was only after it came out that Trestle knew prior to when it came out that Trestle knew about the incidents before it came out to public light. Once you find that out, as an AD, you need to sit down with your coach and say, what else do you know? And I need you to be completely straight up with me. And you really need to tell me what else is there that I need to know about the situation. I don't know if that conversation happened or not, because I find it hard to believe that conversation happened. And the result was he stayed on. You know, you didn't sign up to keep Trestle on. And, you know, you're talking about football coaches. Coaches in general are unhealthily meticulous. You know, they're meticulous in a very unhealthy, almost maniacal way. Very detail-oriented people. And to be successful at the level he's successful at, you have to be a cross your T's and dot your I's type of guy. And when those people miss things, they don't miss things by accident. You know what I mean? So I find it hard to believe that somehow he accidentally did not know about this. And, you know, the article, I don't know if you read the Sports Illustrated article, but it talked about this is just a part of his character and what he does and what he has done since his days at Youngstown State. You know, and they use the example of early on in his tenure at Ohio State, they would have these camps. And at the camps, you know, they would have a lot of kids who probably would never, ever be of the caliber of player to attend the Ohio State University. But they would also invite some of the guys who they were trying to get on campus for as recruits. And so they had this raffle, and all the kids would you know, buy tickets to this raffle to win all these prizes and stuff. And he would rig it. He would rig the raffle so that the guys that he invited who were there for free, anyway, could win all these prizes, you know, new cleats, you know, jerseys, equipment, those kind of things. And so this is just who he is. And I think when you get, again, as a public personality, as a public figure, when you will completely lose the support of, when you will completely lose public opinion is when you act counter to the image that you've presented. That's what LeBron did with the decision. That's what happened with Tiger and the whole golf club SUV incident, that is what happens. Ron Artest does something crazy, that's Ron Artest being consistent with who we think Ron Artest is. When, you know what I'm saying, when Pac-Man Jones wilds out, shoots up a strip club, that is consistent with who he is. We may not like it, but that's what we expect. When you're Jim Tressel and you're preaching ethics and you're preaching values and you're preaching all of this rhetoric you're putting out there, and then this is who you really are, that pisses people off. And that's why I think he had to go. He had to go. So who's at fault? Him. Tressel's at fault. Tressel's absolutely at fault. So let's go on to question two. With that, the institution's at fault, the AD's at fault, Tressel's at fault. How hard does the NCAA come down on Ohio State? What do you think these sanctions are going to look like in the end?
I think they'll end up losing scholarships. I think that they'll end up suffering like two seasons missing postseason play. Similar to USC, some people are predicting worse than USC, could be. But I know there's going to be some missing of postseason play and then some scholarships. I think they got to go that deep. And then I think, you know, somehow they'll sanction Tressel in terms of before he can get another job, that they have to have some sort of cause. I think a lot of those things will happen in terms of that. But I know I think they're going to get some scholarships taken away. And, you know, because the NCAA is about, you know, because they don't have the ability to police the way they need to just across the entire, you know, NCAA, that when they get a high-profile program, they got to make an example of it. And that's kind of been the way they've been working. And so they hammer them as a deterrent to other programs. And so if it can happen to Ohio State, if it happened to USC, it can happen to you.
You have a different perspective on this than I do. I think they're going to come down on them. I don't think they're going to come down on them to set an example. To me, this is how the NCAA creates parity. This is how the NCAA renews itself. At some point, you have to tear down these major programs, or else they will stay on top for forever once you get it going. Once you get a USC, a Florida, a Ohio State, once you get the ball rolling and you get that national recognition and you're in a powerhouse conference, there's really nothing that's going to slow you down other than eventually getting hit with sanctions. And what does that do? It creates an opportunity for another school, for Oregon. You know, in the SEC, it creates another. I mean, in the SEC, it was Alabama taking a step back for all those down years that opened up the door for Florida to come in and reestablish itself, and LSU to come in and establish itself as a national power. And that's, I think this is just it's one of those things that it's like a forest fire. It's bad. It looks bad. There's a lot of devastation. There's a lot of destruction, but it's a natural part of the process. It's a natural part of the process. And in a couple years, we're going to be talking about, in the next 3 years, we're going to be talking about sanctions at Oregon. And we're going to be talking about sanctions at Miami or Florida State or whatever next big power comes up, you know, Alabama or LSU or Auburn or wherever. Everybody's cheating. And I think if you get caught, the NCAA is like, okay, back to the back of the line with you. And who's next? And you can sit in this spot. You can have the throne. You can sit. It's like the dope game. It's like the drug game. The NCAA is the police, and these schools are the drug dealers. All right? And you and I know the police only let drug dealers go as long as they need you. Once you get too big for your britches, they lock you up, they tear you down, they deconstruct your empire. That's what they do.
You wait for Marlowe to come on up.
Right, and then there's a young buck that they slide in, who's going to work with them, who they can kind of control a little bit, and they let him go until he starts to get out of control, then they pull him down. and then they hand it to somebody else. You take it. You work with it. You work it up. It's like a, it's like cookie cops. Cookie cops. That's the way I see the situation. It's the way the NCAA keeps parity. Because, again, some of these schools will never, again, if you don't sanction Ohio State, if you don't sanction USC, if you don't sanction Alabama, the top five is going to be the same for the next 10, 15 years, and it's just going to switch a little bit. LeBron is going nuts right now. I'm telling you, man, the fourth quarter, what do you do with him? I don't know. You can't hand check him. You can't knock him over. That young man get ahead of steam going. He hard to stop.
Yeah, that's when it was the bad boys. He had been in the first row.
Exactly, but you can't do that in 2011. So yeah, I think the NCAA does come down on them hard because that's what they do when they get when you get caught. It's one of those situations where it's like I'm gonna let you do this, but if you get caught, you don't know me.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It's one of those situations where the authorities are like, look, we're gonna let this go. But if you get caught, oh, that's your ass. You
hey,
know?
I just got a text from Mo. He said, yeah, he said tell Marcus it's like the wire.
Exactly. That's what it is. That's what it is. That's
being
exactly
bossy.
What it is. So the next question I got is so given that, so who's taking over as the big dog in the who's Marlo? Who's the Stanfield bunch? Who's the Stanfield gang coming up in the Big Ten? Because it's a vacancy.
Well,
it's a vacancy.
I mean,
the big dog spot is open.
Well, I think, you know, a lot of we talking like I think Michigan State could push up on it. You know, it'd be interesting to see Nebraska coming through. I think it's great timing for Nebraska. I mean, they got some folks who are returning, and they could be interesting. You know, Michigan, because, you know, I've always said about Michigan is that offensively they got all the tools, you know, they're strengthening defensively. And I felt like 60% of it, 50% of it was scheme. You know, I think they're just playing a terrible scheme. And now they got a coach that, you know, they brought an NFL defensive coordinator into the mix. And, you know, I always felt like last year if their defense was in the 50 range, that they would win, you know, 10 games, 11 games. You know, they were in games and just couldn't stop anybody. And so, you know, Illinois had a little finish last year. You know, Northwestern kind of pulled some things. Wisconsin's got to, you know, kind of resettle a little bit. But, you know, I think Brett has put together some good seasons. So, I mean, I think it's open. I mean, I think it's open. And the other thing, I mean, is don't discount this current Buckeye team either. That's the other thing is that, they still got a lot of talent coming back, and I wouldn't just say that they're eliminated. In some ways, things like this can galvanize the program and get people rallied around. So I wouldn't necessarily discount them as someone who as a team that might not compete, even without without some of the players that they're going to have. They got a lot of depth. So you know, even without Terrell Pryor, you know, I think. You know, they still got a lot of depth in that team, and so I wouldn't necessarily count them out.
Yeah, so speaking of Mr. Pryor, what he finna do? That's the other question. What he finna do?
Well, you know, you and I are pretty much, you know, we're sports talk show fans, and so we listen to things. And I heard Colin Cowherd talking about the fact that he may not ever play and that people are coming. In some ways, I thought it was irresponsible of any one of us in the media to talk about, to, like, fire up people in a sense about being mad at Pryor. You know, Buckeye fans, like a lot of rabid fans, are going to be irrational. I kind of look at Pryor kind of like I looked at Neil O'Donnell when he threw two interceptions in the Super Bowl. I knew he couldn't come back to Pittsburgh. When they said he was going to the Jets, I just knew he could get on that plane and go back to Pittsburgh. Just there are certain types of fan bases. When you make certain types of mistakes, you just can't go back. So,
it's a wrap.
And so prior to the interesting thing, because remember I told you, I said if I've been his mentor, whoever was supposed to be with him, he should have just sat out. Now my suggestion, sounds better. Those kids should have been like, yeah, y'all going to kick us out 5 games. We ain't playing in the ball game. He almost, what I suggested, probably was what they should have done.
Yeah.
You know, I think, you know, I see Corrett all over him in a sense that I think because he can't afford to miss competitive time because he's not that type of quarterback yet. However, it is funny that people are talking about him playing another position, and they projected Tebow as a quarterback. And I say Pryor got better skills in terms of passing.
Well, I would say that I don't think people projected Tebow as a quarterback. He convinced Josh McDaniels he could be a quarterback.
Well, I mean,
and that's all it took.
It only takes one team, obviously. But I think that but Pryor can't afford to miss any competitive time.
Right.
And
right.
So what might end up happening is he might end up playing in that new league, that what's that, NFL, whatever league.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the one that's
yeah, playing. I don't know what it's called, but it's talking about.
I mean, he might end up doing something like that to continue his skill development. That might not be a bad place for him to go. He can make a little money. The league was set up for people to then go on to the NFL. You know, so if he can't do the supplemental draft, you know, then maybe he can do something like that. I mean, I think that's pretty much where he's headed. And I think personally he should be headed. If I were around advising him, I don't know if he wants to go back into that storm under that kind of scrutiny and be a part of that.
I would.
No, I think I don't think it's healthy for him to do that at all.
Nah, I pass. I pass. He get every window of one of them cars busted out. People will be busting out the windows of each and every one of 8 of his cars.
He said each of his cars.
Each of his cars will get the windows busted out. Every time he went somewhere and parked his car, windows busted out. Yeah, it'd be a hard knock life for that brother. It's going to be a hard knock life for that brother. I think you hit it right on the head. You talk about LeBron going back to Cleveland. Jarrell Pryor might as well take his talents to South Beach or someplace else.
What is it about Ohio? Wrong side of voting with the with Bush in the second term, crushed the economy with that vote in Ohio. You got LeBron. Now you got what's happening in Ohio.
Who cursed him?
I don't know what's going on in Ohio. I'm from Michigan, but I hate anything on our Midwest economy like this. See, they need more depressed communities.
Maybe that's what it was. Maybe Ohio was trying to get back at Michigan. So it was like, man, if we vote Bush in, he's going to kill the economy, not only here and everywhere else, but in Michigan, too. And we can take over.
We can take over the car industry.
Right. Maybe that's what it was.
But
I don't know, but it ain't working out.
It's not working out for Ohio. They got the Browns struggling.
Yeah, the Browns ain't been good for about 10 years. The Bengals, they catch fire every now and then, but usually, you know, they're more apt to get arrested than to get a touchdown.
It's just
Cavs had a run. LeBron broke their hearts. Now Terrell Pryor breaks their hearts, and they thought they had one of him. They thought they had one.
They won the battle between Michigan and got him and
they lost the war.
Lost the war.
Ohio, you're right. Ohio's been on some tough times, man. They've been on some tough times. It's not getting any easier. No time soon.
No time soon.
Man. So the next question is, who's signing up to take over this program?
Well, it depends on what the sanctions are. I think that that will dictate it. I know they talked about Urban Meyer. I think they're definitely going to do a national search and try to determine. You know, I think they'll definitely do a national search. I think Urban Meyer is a candidate. I mean, I think, you know, he said in a statement that he's not going to be looking to join a program this fall. but Ohio State isn't planning on searching for a coach until, you know, until beyond that fall. I mean, after next season, which would fit into his timeline of, you know, when he would probably be available to do it. So, you know, I think, you know, a lot of the folks up there, you know, that they're talking about, you know, any national coach, any big time coach that's at a program, I think is a candidate for this job. I mean, they're going to do a national search and they're going to try to get a splash, but a lot of it's going to be dictated by what happens with the sanctions. You know, you look at USC, their recruiting hasn't fallen off. You know, they're basically redshirting kids and doing what they need to do. So their recruiting hasn't fallen off. And I don't think Ohio State's recruiting will fall off either. So, you know, it like I said, it depends on.
You don't think so? You don't think so? Because USC has a distinct advantage that Cleveland, Columbus doesn't. It's called Los Angeles.
Yeah, I understand that, but I think that there are certain programs that can. I mean, even when Michigan struggled, you look at they still recruited some talent, particularly offensively. They didn't recruit on both sides of the ball. They didn't leverage the brand that they had. That was a coach's problem. It wasn't that the kids weren't going to come. They just put more emphasis on offense than they did on the defense when they recruited. They got top offensive players around the country. So, you know, I think that, you know, they'll, depending on what the sanctions say, will dictate, you know, what people think they can do with it. If it's a 2-year bowl ban, like starting with next year, then, I mean, you can get someone like an Urban Meyer or Bob Stoops or somebody like that to consider a job. It's really 1 year of recruiting, getting some kids who you're going to redshirt, and then you're going to come back the next year ready to go. You know, if that's the issue. So, you know, I think it'll look at doing it. It's an attractive job. It's a top five job.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think, you know, and then you got some guys who are at the next level who are super coordinators, assistant head coaches, like Mustang or somebody like that, those type of guys. Who are those type of guys who are ready to step into the big time. So, you know, you never know where they're going to go with it. But I think somebody will want to take that job.
Oh yeah, somebody else is gonna want that job. It's like going into Kentucky in basketball. You know, that's still, like you said, still a top five gig. So, you know,
I mean, who do you think will take it?
Who do I think gonna take it? You know, Urban Meyer, the guy from TCU. I can see him making that move. I think if there was a job that would lure him away, I think it would be that gig. You know, and maybe if the Fickell guy handles this, if he parlays this right, you know, he can hang on to it. You know, he's a homegrown guy, he's an ex-Buck guy, and maybe that's what they want. You know how schools can be about bringing in alums to work with programs. So, you know, if Urban Meyer says no, I think Urban Meyer's going to be at the top of any list. If Urban Meyer says no, I think then it becomes wide open, and there are a lot of solid candidates out there who could come? Who would want to come in and run that program? I'm still just a little caught off guard by the fact that Tressel actually resigned.
Well, I think, you know, they heard, like they said, the reports is they probably got wind of the story and decided to. You know, they got to address it. I mean, I think they said things are going downhill, and they had to address it. I mean, I don't know any other way to say it. You know, and you know, I think that was as much Tressel as it was Smith and other folks. You know. Trying to you know, do some of the damage control.
Yeah, it's the beast from Midwest is dead.
Yeah.
I mean, the Ohio State University for the time being, they'll be back. Again, this is how the NCAA cleanses itself. You know, this is its process. This is how it works. They'll be back. Alabama came back. Texas came back. Florida State came back. Miami came back. They all come back. Notre Dame is still trying to figure it out. But they all come back. You know, they all come back. Everybody gets to go around again. You just got to start over. They hit you with some sanctions, and you just got to figure out how to make it work from where you're coming from.
Yeah, but you know, don't say it in Columbus, because they are, you know, I mean, Luke Fickell got his hands full.
Oh yeah,
you
that's
know,
that's not an enviable situation right there. That doesn't qualify.
Yeah, you know, it's going to be. And people talk about Gordon Yee getting his resigning. This is one of the most powerful guys in higher education. I mean, maybe he will resign. I don't see that. He brings in too much money to the university. Now I see Smith going. You know, they'll send the brother down the plank. They'll be like, "You got to walk the plank, bro. You got to just business is business.
Got to take this one for the team.
Just close your eyes. This ain't gonna hurt.
It's not gonna hurt a bit." Not one bit.
Marlo got the gun. Chris and Snoop got it up while you close your eyes. It ain't going to hurt. That's just how it's going to go. Collateral damage. Chris Spielman, we need you to come in and help write the program.
Yep.
You know, that's how it's going to go. They're going to bring one of their own in, you know, to write the program. They're going to pull that USC on. You know, change the AD, talk about they're going to do all that stuff. Tattoos are still going to be flowing. So,
all over tattoos, man. That's the other crazy part. You kind of alluded to it. But, bro, come on, man.
Yes.
Bruh, please.
It's a generation of short-sightedness. You know, it's just, I don't understand it.
Yeah, man. Just, come on, bruh.
You got some memorabilia for a picture of your Aunt Minnie. What you putting on your body?
I mean, oh man, I can't even explain it, man. I'm not a tattoo guy. Never been a tattoo guy.
Oh.
Never will be a tattoo guy. I get it in concept, but just ain't for me. So that even makes it even more hard to relate to, understand, empathize with. I mean, yeah, this is a huge L. This is the opposite of winning. This is the opposite of everything Charlie Sheen preaches. This is the opposite of that.
I'm saying we got to work with the young people. This just won't work.
Well, that's what Trevor was supposed to be doing. I mean, he's supposed to be this upstanding brother. He's supposed to be this upstanding cat. You know, he's supposed to be leading them the right way, showing them the path of the righteous.
He was just pimping.
He was, man. Been pimping since.
And
that's the way it goes down.
And then ran the big pimp move. I mean, Snoop would be proud of this. Knew what he knew, but then said, then cornered them, was like, you can't leave, and you got to come back next year.
Right.
What? See, after, you know what I know, and you knew the deal.
Right.
You told me I gotta come back next year.
You told me I gotta come back.
That's true. Yeah. That's That's true.
Yeah, I mean, what can you say? I mean, he's sucking him.
That's it. How they locked into it and he getting out and they still, I mean, that whole boo was tough to swallow. I was like,
yeah.
I said, ain't that right? But you're right. He wrote all the books.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when it came to implement, take action step, he folded like wet noodles. I'm like, you know, forgot.
What is next book going to be about?
I don't know.
Are they burning Jim Trestle's books in Ohio just like they burn Brown's jersey?
They hope they do.
They burn his sweater vest. In the streets of Cleveland. That's what you're going to see on ESPN tonight. They're going to cut through the streets of Columbus. They're going to have a flameless sweater vest.
I mean, what do you say? You can't do it. They say, what did Colin Cowherd say? It kind of felt like a preacher who are conservatives who preach morality and then get busted in a porn ring or whatever he said.
get busted at a motel at a Motel 6 with a pound of cocaine on the table, 6 hookers in the room, hanging out with Mary and Barry.
I'm praying for forgiveness. You can't do all that.
Talking about this is a missionary mission. I came in here to convert these heathens.
See, I need to get back to the days when Bo said we need a Michigan man coaching a Michigan team. What happened to those days? Woody Hayes turned over his day. Woody Hayes might hit somebody.
Hey, Woody Hayes would have slapped that young man that went to that school newspaper talking crap. That wouldn't have went down if Woody Hayes was still coach. You got cats going to the school newspaper. Again, they're not educating them kids at the university, at the Ohio State University. Don't he know that there's more reputable outlets that actually probably would have paid him for that interview other than the school newspaper? He's trying to get the segregated fees. He don't want to get the real money. I'm trying to get some of his segregated fee money.
And I still don't understand. Can you explain to me the reason why ex-players would come out and say, yeah, we were doing it? I mean, I don't even understand the ex-players coming out and pouring on gasoline.
Man, you know, it was probably one of those cats that knew that was in the program, felt they didn't get a fair shake, felt the school did them bogus, felt, you know, the coach – he probably had some bad blood with Trestle or his wide receivers coach or the offensive coordinator and looked at it as an opportunity to just be an ass. Like, you guys screwed me for 4 years. You jerked me around. I should be in the league, but I'm not, and I'm bitter about it, so I'm going to rat y'all out. That's what that was, in my opinion. And that's why he went to the school paper.
To the school paper.
Again, dog, if you really got something to say, you didn't think to call ESPN or even, like, hit up Deadspin.
I know. I mean,
could have got on with us.
I know. We would give you all kinds of airtime.
You know what I'm saying? You could have came on here and told all kinds of stories about whoever.
We would even distorted your voice.
Yeah, we could have figured that out. We could figure that out. I could have worked that out.
We would have distorted your voice. We would have given you something.
Could have made that happen. No problem. This cat in a school paper. Talking crazy.
Just
divulging all types of secrets.
Talking to a sophomore made his career.
Right.
This is a kid going to be on 30 and 30 the next 30 and 30.
I broke the OSU scandal when I was 19.
When the phone call came in, I couldn't believe it. I was just finishing a Sunday, and phone rang. And before I knew it, I was typing away. You know,
yeah.
The whole thing just blowed out. And like I said before, quit describing Columbus as Compton. It's not. Campus is not that far from Columbus. Campus is not that far from Columbus School for Girls. I mean, Columbus is like most college towns. I mean, you got different factions that work and do whatever. You have neighborhoods where people who have to work more working class neighborhoods. Who many folks end up either some are hustling, some are working at the university and the hospital, and some are clean. It's what a college town has, but it's not. I mean, I hear these people talk about seedy part of town. It's like the seedy part of town for most of these college towns is like three blocks. I mean, quit. And when you're in those neighborhoods, folks know you're there. It ain't like you can't just come and sometimes cats go in the hoop. It's like,
right.
It's where folks, where the game is on. You
right.
Know, in football, I remember playing with football players.
Or going to get their haircut.
Yeah, they're going to get their haircut. That's where you go get your haircut because that's where you can get your haircut.
Right.
Everybody, that's where you're going to go eat because that's where the people cook food that you like.
Right.
You know, it's a lot of stuff that happens when you go to sleep. So, like, unpack this stuff. That's what happens when you have cats who come from influence and they try to understand an environment. I can hear it in their voice when they talk about these national media. But the guy, the author for the Sports Illustrated article, in the city part of time, city part, of, it's Columbus. When you're saying that, it ain't even Cleveland. It ain't East Side. It ain't downtown Cincinnati where, you know, police officers are shooting brothers. It ain't that. It's not that kind of environment. I mean, when I hear that, I just get sick
right.
of it.
And CD for who?
CD, I'm like.
But some of those guys, that's home.
He's like, I'm sorry. I some of the guys I had to interview were in jail. It's like the county jail. It's like if you're in Madison, it's like Dane County Jail. It ain't, you know, I'm not saying it ain't hard. I ain't trying to do no time. But, again, this ain't New York City. This ain't
right.
even banging in Little Rock. quit describing it like that. It kills me when national media folks who, it's mainstream folks, you know, because most of these guys are corporate guys listening to ESPN, they hear that stuff and they're like, ooh. Like, you would drive through the neighborhood and didn't even know you were driving through it.
Right.
So where's
the seedy neighborhood you're taking me to? What do you mean we drove through it? How seedy was that? I didn't even get a bomb on my windshield.
I mean, we understand it, Marcus, but it just, sometimes I hear that and I got to unpack it.
Yeah.
That's what we got to do on Real Sports Guys. We're going to try and inform you so when you go back and listen to these mainstream, don't get caught up. You know, it's like, you know, in Summit Park in Ann Arbor, anybody from Michigan listening to Summit Park, it'd be like cats hanging out at Summit Park. They're hanging in a seedy area. That's where you get to know people. There's food around there. DeLong's is around there. You get your ribs there. That's what the old school was. I mean, it's like that's what, if you're looking for black folks, that's where they congregate.
Right.
They ain't hanging out in the Diag all the time. You know what I'm saying?
Right,
like,
right.
They're not
hanging out at the student union.
Yeah, if you come from Florida to Ann Arbor, where you going to hang out? You come to Florida and Madison, where, you know, you're trying to figure out where to hang out.
And again, that's a CD part of the neighborhood to who? For those cats, for those kids, that's comfort.
That's comfort. They get comfort food. They know cats who hustle just like that. Just because they're around them don't mean they're hustling. I have plenty of friends. They were more interested in making sure I wasn't hustling.
Right.
You need to go get that education. You don't need to be doing this.
Right.
So it's like, you know, half the time, those are the cats telling them not to hustle. You know, it's crazy on how people describe it. You're right. It's like, so when I hear a mainstream guy who writes for SI talking about that stuff, I'm like, and you went to prep school. Yeah. Come on.
Hey. They don't get it. They just don't get it.
They don't get it.
They just don't get it. So I want to get into this new segment we got real quick. And we're going to call it Love It Maine or No Love. I'm going to give you a situation, and you can tell me if you love it, if you're going to give it some love, or you're going to say you don't love it. Now, I called this one, and I told you, I can't take credit. I won't take credit for it. My brother called this one. My brother JJ, he called it. D12 came out this week. Said, I don't want to follow in nobody else's footsteps, so I ain't going to L.A. And they're working on an extension in Orlando.
Hmm. Well,
is that a good move for D12, or is he letting his ego get in the way of doing what may be better for his career?
I would say that that's a bad move, and I'm gonna say no love for the move.
All right, hold on, I got something for you. No love.
No love. That's no love for it, because I think you never give up bargaining power, even though you might want to stay, because you got to evaluate whether or not Orlando, like LeBron. I mean, as much as we're critical for LeBron. You know, if you check the tape, I put as much on the Cleveland organization as well, is that you got to know that they're committed to getting the right people around you. And you got to leverage to see what they're going to do next year to bring in free agents. You know, if there's no lockout and those kind of things. But you got to make sure that people are looking to invest in it. And, you know, so I wouldn't take away the bargaining power that you could have just by keeping it open.
Right.
There's a way you can phrase it. It's like, I would like to come back, but I got to see that there's a commitment to moving us to the next level. I need to see signs of that for me to commit, because I play every hard every night, but I just need to know that, and I need to see that there's commitment to building the kind of team we need to challenge in the East. The East is changing rapidly. And so, but I think he gave up too much ground too early. And that's part of his problem is that, you know, again, some of these new generation cats are more interested in making people feel good and pleasing and got too many antennas. See, Jordan didn't have an antenna. Jordan was like, I don't care. And that's the dog meter piece. That tells you, like, I'm going to do what it needs to happen to win. And I tell you right now, as much as people talk about Jordan staying in Chicago, if Chicago hasn't demonstrated an ability to put some folks around him, don't think he would stay in Chicago. I mean, as much as we want to talk about Jordan staying where he was staying, if Chicago hadn't demonstrated that they really want to invest in getting people around him and helping him get through Detroit, Mike would have probably done the same thing. So, you know, I think that never give up the high ground this early in the game. And I think he's done that because I think he's got antennas. He's too worried about how people feel about him.
Yeah, I think he's one of those fake superstars. You know, he put up numbers, but I don't know how much he really want to win. And I'm not saying that LA was the right move, but when you are not gonna make what could be, when you're gonna eliminate a move because you don't want to be seen as following somebody else's footsteps, I don't know. You know, Chicago. LeBron still left the Chicago door open, even though, you know, I felt he wasn't going to go to Chicago because that would have been too close to, chasing Jordan. So I thought he wasn't going to do that, but he still left that door open. He never closed that door because if that was the best situation, then ultimately he was going to suck it up and go there, in my opinion. And I think that was his motivation, was looking to find the best situation possible so that he could win. When you're doing that, you're not going to eliminate a situation just because you don't want to be compared to another guy.
And understanding that that's not the only situation you can go to. You know, I think there are other moves out there for him to be made. I think New Jersey, I wouldn't throw Dallas out if they don't win this finals. So I think there are other options out here for him to say he's staying in Orlando and not considering, I mean, maybe L.A. is not the right fit, but New Jersey could be with going to Brooklyn and putting you in the center stage and putting you near Madison, you know, Avenue and those kinds of things.
Right.
You know, being there with Darren, you know, that might not be a bad move for you either. You know, battling for that time, creating that rivalry between the Knicks and the Nets in the city. I mean, so I think there were other options that he had that could have been remained open. And there's other markets, you know, given I agree with him that you don't necessarily need to be in one of these big markets to go global. You don't. But I think just to close all the options by just saying you stayed in Orlando, then have they demonstrated that they can get the right players around you to go to the next level? And, you know, are you totally happy with your coach? I mean, I'm not saying Van Gundy is bad or intemperate, but, I mean, those are things that he's got to evaluate. I just think he closed the door. I mean, it's too early. I mean, you got the NBA Finals, and you got another, 12 months of activity, less than that, to a trade deadline kind of thing, depending on what happened with lockout and stuff like that. You know, you just don't lose the high ground on your negotiating, if you want
right.
that.
Right. Yeah. And so, again, it's that rabbit ears. The rabbit ears with guys is what bothers me sometimes. That's what gets on my nerves with LeBron and D-Wade and those guys, is that you can tell that it's like Kendrick Perkins. Last week, before the Thunder got eliminated, Kendrick Perkins is in an article he's quoted as saying that he doesn't listen to the newspapers, he doesn't, you know, watch TV, listen to the radio. He said he don't do none of that. But then he goes on in the same quote about a sentence later to be like, I'm hearing all the criticism that Russell Westbrook is getting, and I don't think it's fair. And I thought you didn't read the newspapers. How are you hearing criticism out there without being connected to some sort of news media to get this feedback about Westbrook, to hear what they're saying about Westbrook? You know, guys got antennas. They may want to deny it, but they got antenna. And I'd rather the guys be honest about it, but don't let it affect your decision-making process. Just do what you're going to do.
That's right. You know, as Van Gundy said tonight, who doesn't want to be able to choose where they want to work?
Right.
That was, to me, very important conversation piece.
Right.
Why is it that guys like this can't choose where they want to work, but you as a fan, you decided at any point, if you had a chance to go where you want to work, you're going to work there.
Right.
If you are in marketing and branding, and you have a chance to work for Procter & Gamble, and you're working for a small marketing firm, but you got a chance to work for Procter & Gamble, they're going to give you bonuses and everything in the world, most people are going to take that because that's the pinnacle of branding in corporate America, is Procter & Gamble. You know, if you have a chance to be a brand manager there, you're going to do it.
Right.
So, you know, people are going to go, they want to work with the elite, in wherever in the industry. So it's funny that our fans can practice one thing in their lives, in their livelihood, but then expect players to behave differently in their own livelihood.
Yeah, and, I think we both reiterated the point throughout the whole process that, we had no problems with LeBron deciding to go to Miami.
Yeah.
That's whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it was a method.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think sometimes people get caught up on this romanticized idea that you play in a place and you stay there your whole career. That's not the reality of sports anymore.
Yeah.
It's just not.
It's like not a reality of jobs in America. People used to work at GM for 30 years, right? You can't work at GM for 30 years anymore.
Nah.
Right?
Your boss don't lay you off. Your boss gonna lay you off. They ain't not gonna pay a line employee to make a whole bunch of money.
That's right. But the thing about it is, if you go step like Puff said, you remember when he had that whole the making of a band when he did that, and they didn't want to go get the cheesecake, and they're out there arguing and debating, and he walked outside, and they were arguing, didn't want to go get, and he said, if you go step, step like you mean it.
Right.
Go get the cheesecake. So. That's the part that we have with people like LeBron. And if you're going to step, step like you mean it. Don't step halfway and get the antennas. Just step and let people live what they're going to live with. And that's the problem that we have with some of these players. They just don't step and step like they mean it.
Right.
Telling them step like they meant it. When he went to Phoenix, he stepped. He had to go. It was time to go. Everybody had to go. He wasn't apologizing for it. It was just a new opportunity. If Jordan would have had to step, he would have stepped. And when he had to go to Washington, he went to Washington. No regret. He just stepped. There's a new opportunity. And, you know, I think these young cats just don't step and just go. I think the one person that stepped and just went was Darren. You know, he kind of got moved, but he didn't look back on it like it was bad. He just kept on doing his thing. He didn't let the antennas get to him, you know, and people saying what he did or didn't do in Utah. He just kept on stepping. So it's just that's the part that these young cats got to get over.
Yeah, man. You gotta. Again, this is to me what separates the real from the fake. Is that you got to decide what you need to do to win. And it seems like there are only about two or three guys who are really, really focused at winning and winning championships. Or at least are in a position to really maneuver themselves where they can win multiple championships. Carmelo is not one. Dwight Howard is not one. You know, I think Chris Paul wants to win. I think if New Orleans is the best deal, he's going to stay there. Wherever the winning is, that's where Chris Paul is going to wind up. You know, and I think that's the kind of move he's looking to make. But I don't know about these other cats. You know, I just don't. So we give no love to Dwight Howard and him not wanting to follow in Shaq's footsteps. Do what you need to do. Don't worry about Shaq. Shaq did what he needed to do. You do what you need to do. Another one. Commissioner Goodell is surprised at the negative fan reaction to the NFL lockout. What do you make of this?
No love for this reaction. You can't keep messing over the fans expecting to just, thank you, may I have another? Take a few like, hey, you don't care about me, I don't care about you. And, you know, it's funny, boy. They like politicians, but I just didn't know. No, you knew. You thought they were just going to take it. And so that's a good sign. And then, you know, you got to deal with it. But to be surprised, the fans got to understand. Come on. I remember I told you, when the owners won, that wasn't really winning. That could be losing because anybody who's perceived to have the power and the ability to stop it and they don't are going to be in a negative position. So winning in court isn't necessarily a good thing because in the fans' eyes, that means you have the ability to put an end to it because the court just gave you leverage. Not you don't have the ability to now leverage and screw the other side. Now, the fans believe you had the ability to end it quickly. And now they believe the owners, including the commissioner, had ability to come to a compromise and end it. And that's what happens when you win a court decision. There's a perception that now it's shifted to your side and you have the ball in your court and a chance to actually develop some kind of strategy in terms of end game. That's why, you know, I said it was not necessarily a good thing that the owners won. In some ways, the owners maybe didn't want to win. And have the players perceived as the people who could necessarily make the compromise. But that's how it goes.
Yeah, Goodell gets – well, I'm going to throw a curveball here. I love this because
– Love it, man. Love it, man.
I'm loving this one because it simply just shows how Goodell just doesn't – you don't get it, dog. You just don't get it. Like, you don't get that, nah, people ain't going to stand by. And you guys had it great. You guys had it real good. You guys got the game. You got the product. And y'all thought that people just going to stand by while y'all bicker over billions of dollars and not feel some kind of way about it? Are you serious? Are you for real? So I'm loving this one. I'm actually loving this because it's like, dude, what did you expect? Like, this is what you get, you know? You roll the dice, you might crap out. And not saying that they're going to crap out, not saying that this is going to have some long-term lasting effect, but I think if nothing else, it's a good wake-up call that, look, man, y'all need to figure this out ASAP because people ain't going to stand for this. They're just not. So get on your job, get in the room, lock yourself in the room, and come out with a deal.
And like third base always says, you got the gas face. Hellball.
Oh man.
You know it's always a good show when you give a third base reference.
Oh yeah. Anytime you can squeeze some third base in there, that's what's up. Then we got Lance Armstrong. Lance Armstrong, alleged to have been on PEDs. Now,
I love this one.
Yeah. I gotta hit you off with
it. Love it, man. Love it, man.
Oh, man. This cat, Lance Armstrong. To me, it boils down to this. What is Lance Armstrong famous for? Why don't you just explain to the people real quick, D-Wills, why is Lance Armstrong famous?
Well, Tour de France, multiple wins of Tour de France, overcoming bout with cancer.
Stop right there.
Back.
Stop right there. He won multiple Tour de France's after a bout with cancer. Do you think he didn't have some help in that healing process? It's cancer. If you could just get up in the morning and go to work, if you work in a regular old clerical job, answering phones, after having cancer, if you can get up and just go to work the next day, you have made an amazing accomplishment.
I tell you.
Be able to get up and get on a bike and ride a bike for, like, what, 3 days or something like that, you got to be on something extra.
And it ain't Tylenol.
Nah, they ain't ibuprofen or Tylenol. You want something extra. I'm sorry. So I'm not surprised.
But
I'm not surprised at all.
Wearing the Lance Armstrong, the little thing around the wrist.
Yeah.
All that stuff. They've been trestled. They've been trestled.
That's a new term. We coined that one. Don't get trestled. Whatever you do, just don't get trestled. You out there in the streets, you living your life, you trying to stay on the righteous path. You know, you do what you need to do, but don't get trestled.
And most people who support it are like trestled. It's like they don't want to know. Right? They know, but they don't want to know.
Right.
You want to have the ability, you want to be able to deny. You want to have deniability. So everybody's like, we don't want to believe this. But even though the sport is rampant. And so do you think during a time where it was most rampant, he was the one guy that wasn't doing anything?
Yeah.
I just, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, he was the one guy who wasn't doing anything, and he overcame cancer. And he was smoking everybody. But he was the one clean guy in this sport. Either everybody else really, really sucks at cycling, or Lance Armstrong was on something. I mean, think about that. Everybody else is cheating. The one guy who's not cheating, oh, yeah, and just got over cancer, is whooping everybody's ass. Come on, bruh.
And on his team, and guys on his team were caught. So, as Ray would say, nothing for nothing means nothing. So the guys who were supporting him and trying to keep up with him were caught. I'll start with this one. I just say it's just a part of this sport. It's rampant. You know, do what you need to do. Cycling's only important to me, maybe. It used to be back in the day, wild water sports would do it, take us through Tour de France. That's about it. You know, now I don't even really pay attention to it if it ain't underneath. So, not in my world, but, man, shoot yourself up until you want to. Shoot yourself up until your kids have three legs. I mean, do what you got to do. If that's what it's about, then go at it. Because, you know, I mean, I think we're at a point right now where we just need to say, how goose can you go? Just shoot up whatever. Shoot Kool-Aid mixed with heroin, whatever you're going to do to try to. I mean, you got to figure, you know, people are just going to do what they need to do. I mean, it's like chasing a ghost, trying to catch up to what these guys are doing in terms of doping. I mean,
right.
I'm amazed that the people who are in charge of these doping agencies and what they got to do to try to catch up to this game, man. These folks are so sophisticated.
And honestly, I mean, at the end of the day, and I used to feel a certain way about this just because being an athlete, you're like, nah, man, that's cheating. That's not how you're supposed to do it. You're supposed to go on your God-given talent. But, I mean, if you look at it, you know, cats in the 70s didn't lift weights. Weightlifting and weight training changed the game in the 80s and 90s. So what's next? You know, okay, so what extra can I put in my body? And then you got the supplements and the PEDs. I think that's just the next evolution of the athlete. I mean, how far can you push your body? And in order to do that, you're gonna need some additional assistance. I mean, I think it's the same type of idea that weight training was, where it's like there used to be guys who back in the day were older than me, play with my uncles, who would be like, nah, I don't lift no weights. That's for suckers. Yeah. I just play ball. You know, I don't lift weights. What do I need to lift weights for? I just go out there and I play ball. It's all natural. And that used to be the righteous stance. You know what I mean? That used to be the righteous stance. And nah, weightlifting is for suckers. That's for weaklings. That's for guys who don't got the natural ability. You know? Where now it's like, okay, everybody lift weights. And that's just par for the course. And you lift weights to compete. And if you ain't lifting weights, you ain't competing. And PEDs are probably going to be eventually looked at the same way. If you ain't on it, you're cheating. I mean, if you ain't on it, you ain't in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just going to be a part of the program. I think the thing that does need to happen is that there does need to be some serious research as to what are the side effects, because there are some. Because it's extra. Anytime you put something extra in your body, you're going to get something extra out of your body. And it ain't always going to be good. So you might want to know what that's going to be.
Good. Yeah, we're going to end up being like the Incredible Hulk. Brain Eye Bandit. You know, at your own, you know, do what you do.
Yeah.
So I don't advocate for it, but, you know, I feel like these dope agencies, you know, have been chasing the ghost for a long time. And that ghost is Lance Armstrong.
Yeah. That's the outro music, 2 minute warning. So let's see if we can get in two more rapid fire real quick. We got Mike Brown. Should the Lakers have talked to Kobe?
That's just not Buss's mold. I mean, he's demonstrated before in the past he's gonna do what he's gonna do. So yeah, you should talk to Kobe, but that, you know, he wasn't gonna bring Phil back if he was talked into it. So and they got them together once he hired them, but you know, obviously, you know, they had other people they liked, the players liked, but I think Mike Brown is going to be a good pick.
Yeah, I think it was a good pick. I think it was a good decision to bring in Mike Brown. Yeah, you should have had a conversation with Kobe. It's just, I mean, it's not even that. It's the fact that if Kobe is your best player, you want to make sure he's on board with who's brought in, because the worst case scenario is that they're not a match and it all fails and you wind up firing a guy because he didn't mess with your superstar. So for the sake of actually being successful and winning, I think you had that conversation just to make sure that everybody's on the same page. You know,
like I told you off the air, Buss is telling people Laker brand is bigger than the person.
Yeah, yeah. And then the other one real quick, Tiger Woo.
Tiger.
What's up with Tiger?
He's like the Mike Tyson of golf. He's the Mike Tyson of golf. You don't intimidate him anymore. They're coming at him. But,
yeah, they are.
I think he got one more run in. I bet on
you think so?
He got one more run.
He's going through a rough stretch, man. I mean, I can't think of a superstar athlete who has had a rougher kind of valley in their career than Tiger has right now. I mean, other than Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson didn't have the longevity and consistent success that Tiger had.
He's going back to Vegas. That's it.
That's what Tiger needs. Tiger need a hangover type adventure. You need to go chase him. You need to go snatch, steal a tiger or something. Steal a lion or something. You know. Well, that's all for this week. Real Sports Guys, signing off. See you next week, 8:30, 10:30. Holla.
All right, we off the air.
That was a good one.
Yeah.
You saved me the hang
up. It's something, man. He needs to get his mojo back. I really don't know how to do that for him. I don't know what to prescribe.
He need one of them. He need to go hang out with Barkley. He need to spend a weekend with Barkley and get back on his game.
Yeah.
Something. He's struggling, man. That was a good show, man. I think we got a good format.
Yeah. Yeah, we can keep this rolling.
Call in from California, huh?
Oh, yeah. Did you know that person?
I didn't know Rita. I don't think so.
Nah, I didn't know Rita either. So that's good, though. That's good to see out there listening. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I like that. I feel like we're beginning to expand a little bit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think we got a good format all together, man. And, yeah, we got to get back on the blog game.
Yep. Yeah, I got this Laker one that's coming. I just got to work in this Mike Brown angle now. Yeah. They're throwing me curveballs.
Oh, yeah, that one was a curveball. But I think long-term, I think he made that hire for the long-term.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was the right move. You know, I think it was the right move. I think that's the direction. You know, they need more defensive focus. He's proven to be a pretty solid defensive coach, an above-average, an above-solid defensive coach. I mean, look at what investing in a defensive coach did for the Bulls coaching philosophy.
Yeah.
I mean, it took them from 8 seed the year before, you know, to a 1 seed in a matter of, you know, a year.
And you don't know what he could do offensively because Cleveland was limited in a lot of different ways and in terms of trying to figure out what to do with
right. That
team. So, you know, I think that, you know, we might have a chance to see him because of the offensive talent that he has on Lakers. You might see him expand his game a little bit offensively. I think he might be good for players like Ron.
Yeah.
He got a level of intensity. I think part of it was Ron being on medication, but part of it is still got like one of them soothing personalities, lull you to sleep.
Yeah.
Sleepy. And Mike Brown is hyped up. Mike Brown will feel a lot like Queensbridge to him.
Yeah, Brown need to be cattle prodded every now and then.
You know, and Mike will get in with him.
Yeah.
Like, come on, let's go, baby.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, it'll be good for cats like that. But they're going to, you know, they still need to do some work in the backcourt, build that athleticism up a little bit.
Yep.
Get somebody who could break down on the perimeter of it in Kobe. So they got some work to do in the offseason.
They do.
But I think having a good defensive mindset can keep you in games.
Yeah.
In a way that I think he'd be a little more demonstrative about getting that ball to Powell. You know, he'll be good for Powell in terms of lighting a fire under him. In a way that I don't think Phil.
I might start need to go in and see Ron Sykes. He might want to make a couple appointments.
Well, it's been good, man. It's good.
All right, man. I'm
gonna go my swinger thing. I'm gonna start doing some prep work. I'm gonna post some stuff, and the best way to maybe post it, I'm gonna go back in here. Might be to post it through Ping.
Uh huh.
Because
okay,
I
still got that email.
Yeah, so you should probably look at that. I'm going to try and set that up so that when
okay. You
do one post, it can go
right,
to
it can go all across.
Yeah, it'll go to the Facebook account and go post on the blog on Tumblr.
Cool.
Okay? So
all
I'll
right,
try and make sure that's set up when you're ready to go.
Okay, cool.
All right, peace.
All right, peace.